Thank you so much for joining us for Spirit, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and coordinator and host for Spirit. The OU started Spirit several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors. Everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, Spirit continues to be the safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program is called Blending Families for a Good Mix. We're so happy to welcome back Yeshaya Kraus, LCSW and SIFI, Director of Education of Shalom Task Force. Shalom Task Force has a wonderful experience with the Orthodox Union. We have a wonderful relationship. I myself have done programs with Shalom Task Force for many years now, and we're so happy whenever we have them present on Spirit. I just want to remind everyone with the email that you received that following the session today, which is recorded, following that session, we will be doing a session of Let's Talk, which is an interactive session that will reflect what we've learned today, what we're thinking about after today's program. That will not be recorded. Everybody will have the opportunity to unmute, of course, and to share any of their comments in small groups. So if you want to join us for Let's Talk after we conclude the program, just stay on the Zoom. Okay, we will get back to more details about that later. It's my honor and privilege to turn the Spirit Forum over to Yeshaya Kraus. Thank you everyone for joining us.
Okay, thank you everyone. I'm gonna say good morning because that's what it is where I am, but good whatever part of the day it is for you. Hope your day is going well and nicely. Thank you so much, Reverend Steinig, for having me on, for inviting me over again for this forum. It's always something that I enjoy. I keep telling people I have the best job. I get to just talk about important things with, you know, important information about relationships and healthy relationships, and talk about the tools that people can use to make their relationships even better. So I definitely appreciate the opportunity to do that again here. So as mentioned, so the topic of today's discussion is, well, it's going to be talking about blending families in a good way. And I think that it's a very unique topic because it's not just a matter of blending families. It's about taking the foundational understanding of what makes a family work, and then taking that and using that when you're trying to take two different families and putting them together into one. And this is not just specifically for people who are remarrying themselves or getting married into a family that already exists. This is also something to think about for someone who has family members, extended family members who may be doing that, or somebody whose children may be blending their family with another. And these are all concepts, I think, that are important for us to think about and use, and really to try to make the most of our own abilities to create healthy relationships and to support our friends and loved ones in creating their own healthy relationships, whatever the situation may be. Whenever I give these talks, I like to ask people to please feel free to put any questions or comments in the chat. You know, if it's something that I'm not going to get to or that I feel would be important to address right here, right then and there, then I will definitely do that. And if it's something that we'll get to, then we'll get to it. But I do encourage people to interact that way. I enjoy questions. It keeps things interesting. So I guess let's get started. So whenever we talk about relationship, whenever we talk about any kind of family, it's really important to kind of define what we're looking for in relationships. And relationships in and of themselves are kind of funny things. As you think about it, there are several needs that we all have as humans. You can think about it, you can go down the list of checkboxes and things that we need in order to survive. You know, there's food, there's water, there's shelter. And most of the things that we need, in order to survive, we can kind of get by ourselves. Let's say we were stranded in a forest or something like that. You know, we would probably figure out a way to eat something. We would probably figure out a way to drink, to catch water. We would probably figure out some sort of shelter, whether it's a matter of going into a cave or making some sort of a lean-to under a tree, whatever it is, we'd figure it out. And the one thing that we really cannot do by ourselves, which is integral to human survival, it's a very important component, is the ability to have a healthy and supportive connection with somebody else. And we can't do that with ourselves. We can be as supportive as possible of ourselves, but quite honestly, even in order to do that, we need to have had some sort of a template, we need to have had some sort of an example from earlier on in life of what a healthy relationship is. So that's the one thing that we really cannot do by ourselves. So when we're talking about creating families, and certainly when we're talking about blending families, of which there are definitely more complications than might otherwise be the case, we have to kind of understand what exactly a healthy relationship is and what it looks like and just the basic concepts. So the goal of creating any family is to create that kind of a safe and healthy relationship. So first, let's try to define what exactly a healthy relationship is. There are three types of relationships we're going to cover. We're going to focus primarily on a healthy one for today because that's hopefully what we're all going for. So I have this quote that I think really sums up what a healthy relationship is. And it goes like this: I will invest myself in the relationship to the best of my abilities in a way that helps you feel safe, secure, cherished, and loved. I will do this in a way which does not compromise my ability to feel the same way. I'm going to read that again. I'll put myself into the relationship and invest myself in the relationship to the best of my abilities in a way that helps you feel safe, secure, cherished, and loved. I will do this in a way which does not compromise my ability to feel the same way. So what we're really seeing here in this summary, in this description of what a healthy relationship is that you have a couple of things going on. Firstly, there's that first part of it talks about commitment, talks about being committed to the other person. It talks about using the best of your abilities. It talks about using all of your skills and talents and whatever you have at your disposal to try to make that person understand that you are committed to them. And the goal of that is to help the other person feel safe, to help the other person feel cared for and loved. The other half of it is that we understand that in order to properly do that, we also need to feel like we're being cared for and loved. And we can't do things in order to really create a healthy relationship, we have to know what we're capable of and what our limits are. I can't do something which is beyond my limits, which is going to damage me emotionally in order to make somebody else feel cared for and loved. That extends into other kinds of relationships, whether it's codependence or enmeshment. But that's really what we want. We want that balance of making sure that the other person knows that we are committed and making sure that the other person knows that they are our top priority, and also making sure that we're looking out for ourselves. And the only way to really be able to do this, the only way to really be able to ensure that we're keeping both our own safety, our own good in mind, while still making the other person's good and the other person's emotional safety a top priority, is to have good, healthy boundaries. Now, you think about it, like why this is almost a funny question. Why is there this focus on safety? The reason that safety is such a huge focus in creating a healthy relationship is because without that kind of emotional safety and physical safety too, for that matter, without that foundation of safety, a relationship really can't grow. Safety in a relationship is the foundation, it's the basis, it's the soil that we can plant the seeds in for whatever grows after that. You think about it, if I don't feel particularly safe in a relationship, I'm not gonna feel free to voice my opinions about things. I'm not going to feel free to express whatever needs I may have. And if I don't feel safe, I'm not gonna feel like the other person has my best interests in mind either. So in order for anything good to happen, there has to be that underlying assumption, that underlying foundation of safety. And that only comes about when we have appropriate boundaries and when we're able to set appropriate boundaries. Now, a lot of times when we talk about boundaries, people have in mind that this idea of boundaries is something which has negative connotations. A lot of times, like I talk to teenagers also, and one of the very common reactions that comes up when I speak to teenagers about boundaries is like, oh, well, boundaries are only for when something bad happens. So it's like, oh, I have to assert a boundary, I have to set a boundary. Like, it's not really true. When we talk about boundaries, what boundaries are essentially is the rules under which the relationship functions. So you think about it like this: when you have, go back to biblical times, you had a wall around the city, you had walled cities. The wall is, sure, the city around the wall would keep people out. It would make sure that people who weren't able to go in, people who weren't able to, the walls around the city would make sure that people would not get in if they weren't supposed to. But the wall in the city also helped to kind of define the city. It would also kind of help to define what was inside the city, what was within the city limits, maybe different parts of the city. And very similarly with boundaries, when we are able to establish clear and safe and understood boundaries, that helps not only to define what's not allowed in the relationship, but it also helps us to define what is in the relationship. Clear boundaries help us to know what to expect in the relationship. So to give a very, very low key, which is an example, which is really not related to this particular discussion, but I think it's a clear example for what boundaries are and how they work. You go into the local CVS or you go into the local 7-Eleven, local convenience store, and there's a cashier on the other side of the counter. And I know what the rules are of this interaction. I know that I'm supposed to give the person money. They're supposed to give them change. We'll say good morning to each other. We'll say have a good day. And that's it. That's the whole thing. The reason that I'm able to engage in that relationship with any degree of safety and confidence is because I know what to expect. I know what the rules are. I know what the relationships are. And I know exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. I know what the other person is supposed to be doing. Now, and if there were no expectations, if there were no rules to govern that relationship, I wouldn't necessarily be able to engage that way. I would be much more cautious. So clear boundaries help you to know what to expect. And repeated respect for the boundaries that we establish in relationships, both me respecting the other person's boundaries and expectations and the other person respecting my own, creates that foundation of safety in the relationship. It really gives a person confidence in the relationship and helps them to really engage in the relationship in a full way. So to come back to that quote, I'm going to invest in myself, but I can only really do that if I feel safe. And the only way that I'm going to feel safe is by observing and seeing, by developing trust that the boundaries that we have, the expectations that we have of what this relationship are, that we've mutually agreed on what this relationship is going to be, are going to be respected properly. So this is obviously going to be very different. One would hope that a marriage is going to have a little bit different, somewhat different boundaries than the local cashier. We would hope that it's going to be a little bit more detailed. So you think about it. There are three questions that you can think about to help you to understand what those boundaries might be. And obviously this has to be a subject of communication as well, but just for yourself to know what the expectations are of the relationship going in. So question number one, what is the relationship that you're thinking about? So that's a pretty simple answer, usually most of the time. But if you start thinking about the different roles that you play, which is the second question, then it might start to get a little more complicated. So I'm a husband, I'm also a father, I'm also a caretaker. I also have specific roles that I play around the house. So thinking about what's the relationship and then thinking about, okay, within that relationship, what exactly is the role? What are the roles that I'm playing within the relationship? And then on top of that, thinking to myself, what are the rules and expectations that others have of me in this relationship? What are the rules and expectations that others have of me within the roles that I'm playing? And what are the rules and expectations that I have of others in the roles that I'm playing in the relationship that I'm thinking about? So that in and of itself, like it sounds like it can be kind of complicated, which honestly it can be. A lot of times these things kind of go organically and they kind of develop by themselves. And it's not something that people necessarily have to think about all that much. So to throw an additional level onto it, it can kind of become a little bit more complicated though. So let's say when you're dealing with a blended family, when you're dealing with even an extended blended family, you're playing a lot of different roles that others in the system that you've entered into have a very different experience with. So let's say you have somebody who is in a second marriage and there are kids on both sides. And they're members of the extended family on both sides. So now, not only have you taken on the position and role of wife, you're also filling a position, that position of wife, which was previously played by someone else who also played the role of the children's mother and also played the role of sister-in-law, also played the role of aunt and grandmother, or you can keep on going down the checklist of all the different roles that you may have played. So you are stepping into a role that was previously occupied by someone else. Someone else was playing that role. So not only do we have the expectations of yourself to contend with, like, okay, this is what I'm getting myself into, this is what I think it's going to be like, you also have the expectations of others, not formed by just kind of some academic idea, some theoretical idea, and allowing yourself to kind of grow organically into that role and to develop along with everyone else. The other people who are in that system kind of are operating under certain expectations of what that role is based on whoever was playing it beforehand. And that can be a very difficult kind of a thing to do. Like, for example, just to kind of analogize it, give you an analogy for what that might look like. So let's say you're coming into this role of spouse, and you have certain academic expectations of what that might be like, whether based on your own previous experiences or not. And everyone else has expectations of what the person who plays that role is going to be like, based on, again, what they've previously experienced with whoever it was before. So you're starting off at an expectation level of, let's say, 25, and they're already up all the way at 100 because they have a much fuller expectation. The role that you're going to be growing into is already very fleshed out to them. So you're not just building your own role, you're also kind of going up against whatever the expectation of that role was before. So it can be a very challenging thing to get yourself into. So in order to really be able to get into these things, you need to acknowledge your own expectations of these relationships, of what's going to be in there. What's that, as we said before, the 0 to 25, what exactly is that for you? And also to be open to hearing the expectations of the others involved. And this is really key to being able to develop these kinds of relationships successfully. And quite honestly, it's really key to being able to develop relationships in any capacity, of being able to be open to hearing and acknowledging and respecting the expectations of whoever else is involved in whatever system you're entering into. But in particularly in these, where you have these expectations are not just there, they're also very deeply seated, they're very emotional, they're potentially very emotionally charged for the people who are already there and who are having these expectations of you. So opening those lines of communication to whoever else might be involved can be very important. So coming back to these three questions that we mentioned before: what's the relationship, what's the role, and what are the rules and expectations that you may have? We have to really start to look at exactly what the answers to those questions might be. So are you a spouse? Are you a step parent? Are you a parent supporting their children blending into their own new marriage? Are you a parent who's blending their own family? What about the extended family? How are they going to play out into this? So all these different roles, all these different relationships are things that are going to have some sort of an impact on how you form things up. And always keeping in mind that you're going to have your own expectations, which are valid and which are important, and which you want to be able to be respectful of. You know, obviously your first priority has to be to your own emotional health, and part of being able to be respectful of that is being able to acknowledge those expectations, is being able to respect where those expectations may have come from and being able to deal with it on your own terms. But you also have to be able to acknowledge and respect that other people are going to have different expectations based on the role they see you playing, even if that's not the role that you have in mind to play. So if a person is marrying in, now you're the husband, so grown children may look at you and see and think to themselves that you may think that you're assuming the role of father as well, even if that's not necessarily what you had in mind. So again, opening up a conversation about these things, opening up a dialogue with the other people involved can be very important. So, this is all very important, regardless of whether you're the one who's actually doing the blending or if it's someone in your family who is married and is now bringing a lot of their new players into the family dynamic, which can be kind of difficult as well. You're creating relationships with, say, let's say if somebody's children get remarried and now you have a whole slew of new grandchildren that you have to deal with. So now there's a whole dynamic. I guess this is actually appropriate when thinking about Hanukkah parties. How are you gonna deal with the relationship that you have with your biological grandchildren and the relationship with the step-grandchildren that may be different? You want to make sure that your grandchildren don't feel like that, like your biological grandchildren don't feel that they're being shortchanged. You want to still make them feel special. You want to make them feel loved and cherished, as we said before. But you also want to make sure that your step-grandchildren feel included. And that can be a very difficult balance to, that can be a very difficult balance to run. Then to top it off, you also have the, so these are your children getting married, who are getting married, and they're bringing in these new step-grandchildren. You want to think also about how the way you relate to your grandchildren and step-grandchildren is actually going to impact your children, because that's also going to be something. It's probably something that they're thinking about, something that they're concerned about. So you want to really be able to think through these things and make sure that they work for you. Then there's also the idea of let's say you're the person who's blending. There's the idea of how you're going to bring your new family into your, I guess, original family dynamic. Bring your new family into the extended members of your old family. How do you relate to the new members of the family? How do the new family members relate to the original members of your family? And how is that relationship going to impact them? So what we need to think about is how we're going to really mindfully, and it's a lot of information to take in. It's a lot of things, different moving pieces to think about. It's a very complex machine. There's a lot going on there. And I'm not going to say that this is the only way, but the way to really get into it and make sure that you're doing what needs to be done is to think about mindfully creating the relationships that you'd like to see. This is true across the board. This is true in marriage. This is true with children. This is true with extended family members, stepchildren. And you can go through the whole list of relationships that we've mentioned today, but it's true across the board. In order to create anything, we have to have a blueprint of what we're looking for. All right. If anybody's ever put together IKEA furniture, you'll know that they do include instructions, as sometimes are helpful, sometimes not, depending on who you are. But in order to have an idea of how you want the furniture to look, you have to know what it's supposed to look like in the end. And to an extent, relationships are similar. We have to be able to mindfully create the relationship that we want to see, both for ourselves and for others. So step one of what we want to accomplish is to really think about, okay, what's important to me in this relationship? Could be a matter of thinking about doing different things. It could be a matter of making sure that you feel a certain way around other people. Could be a matter of making sure that other people feel a certain way around you. Just really taking the time to put some thought into it. And this is something that actually as a blended couple, people can really do together to figure out, okay, how are we going to approach these things? How are we going to approach the children? How are we going to approach the stepchildren? How are we going to approach step-grandchildren and non-step-grandchildren? How do we want to make a plan to interact and a plan to make sure that everybody feels included, feels safe, and feels good about the whole thing? And it can really be just as simple as having, not that this is necessarily simple, but it can be as little as having just an honest conversation about these things with the people who are involved. Having an open conversation, an honest conversation with the members of the family that you're looking to build a relationship with. Again, whether it's a spouse or whether it's children, etc. Just to kind of address the elephant in the room, so to speak. I'm not saying it's going to necessarily be a comfortable conversation. It very well might not be, depending on what your relationship with the person is. But it could really be as simple as just calling out that elephant in the room and saying, I'm not the person that you're used to. I'm not the person you might miss. And I want to be open to creating our own relationship, really acknowledging that a big part of the reason that people have difficulty or experience challenges when they're creating these kinds of relationships is because they have all these expectations, because there's all this emotional investment in what this relationship represents to them. And really addressing that and saying, I know that I'm not that person. I'm not that person who you had such a strong connection with. I'm not that person who used to be here. And I want to create a relationship which is ours, which is not just the one that you had with the other person. Because whatever that was, whether it was an amazing relationship or whether it was a relationship which was very challenging, that's not our relationship. That's not us. You and I are different people, and we can create something which is completely different. Opening the doors to communication like that, even just by putting it out there, saying, I know that there's a kind of an awkwardness about this. I know that there's a kind of a challenge that may be hard to deal with. And you think about it, very often there are a couple of different things that contribute to this kind of tension between people whose families are blending. One is the fact that you're not that person that they miss, and you're not the person that they're used to in the role that you're playing part of, which is really a matter of their own feelings. You know, they miss somebody, and nothing that you can do is going to change that. They're going to miss that person. They're going to be used to a different person playing that role. The more that you're able to develop your own role, the more that you're able to develop your own personalized way to relate to each other, the less that aspect of them missing the original person or them having those memories of the other person are going to impact your relationship. So the more you grow past that, the less it's going to affect it. But that's one piece that we really have to be able to accept and acknowledge and know that we're really not going to change. The other part of it is that they really don't know what your intentions are. You know, if we have they don't know what your plans are. They don't know what you're looking for. And I think any time really that we have such an unknown, we have such a new situation, which we really don't know what's going on. Even if we're going in without any assumptions whatsoever, there's a certain fear there, which is a perfectly natural reaction to the unknown. It's a perfectly normal reaction to have when there's some sort of a new factor, a new aspect which is coming into our lives. There's uncertainty. And whenever there's uncertainty, there's a natural inclination to try to test the boundaries. There's a natural inclination. We see this a lot of times with children and teens, but it's true with adults as well. There's a natural inclination to try to test boundaries and to try. And the reason for that is not, God forbid, to be antagonistic, hopefully in good circumstances. It's not to be mean. It's because we're trying to figure out what this is. We're trying to figure out what exactly is going on. And once we know the lay of the land, once we know what's what and what the boundaries are, what the limits are, then we create a safe space for ourselves. And we create a safe space for that relationship to exist in. But if we don't know what those boundaries are, we don't know what, if say a child doesn't know what a parent's boundaries might be, there's no safe space for that relationship to develop in. So again, and I'm not saying that we have to have a clear year to year, month to month path, a clear plan for how this relationship is necessarily going to develop, but it's important to at least put out the idea that I don't really know where this relationship is going to go, and I want to create our own relationship. And again, this is something which applies to spouses, it applies to children, et cetera, the whole way through. And this idea of testing boundaries, it's true even for spouses. It's true when people get married and they have previous experiences with marriage, then there are going to be certain assumptions or certain fears or hopes that they have based on whatever the previous marriage was that they're going to bring into this marriage. And it's important to acknowledge those fears, acknowledge those hopes, to be upfront about them. The more we're able to talk about whatever our hopes are, whatever our intentions are, obviously on an age-appropriate way. You're not going to sit down with a three-year-old and say, listen, you know, this is what I hope to have for our relationship, but you know, in an age-appropriate way. You want to be able to communicate that I want to have my own relationship with you. And I know that may be hard, and I know that may be complicated sometimes, but to really be able to open up that line of communication, and for spouses especially, really, to be able to open up those lines of communication can be a tremendously supportive for on both sides. One of the amazing things about having that kind of open communication is like, okay, yeah, I understand that this thing that maybe I was very happy about with my previous marriage may not be an option in this marriage, but I also know that you're willing to hear it. And I know that you're also willing to respect that I have that. I have that experience. And it's an interesting thing. You look at Dr. John Gottman's research. He has a fascinating statistic. He's done research on couples, employee couples that interact with each other for decades. And he came out with this amazing thing. He says that successful couples, when you have a conflict, that 69% of the conflicts that successful couples have will never be solved. Ever. 69%, it's a mind-blowing statistic. The difference between successful couples and the couples that are not as successful is how you navigate that conflict. And he says that even if we end up arguing about something, we end up discussing something, and neither of us gets anything of what we want, the very act of talking about what we want and the experience of having that need respected and heard by the other person and validated, like, I get that you have a need and I would love to be able to help you meet it at this point. I can't help you with that for whatever reason. That experience in itself, even if I don't get anything practical out of it, brings the relationship closer. And certainly in a situation like this, where you're talking about the assumptions and the hopes and the fears that you have for the relationship that you have, that's something that can really be very supportive when you're doing it with your spouse. And again, this is something that even if you don't have anything in particular in mind for what you want to see, discussing the idea that you don't have anything in particularly in mind for what this relationship is supposed to look like can also be very empowering. It's more about being on the same page in the here and now than about making plans for the future together. If we ourselves are on the same page right now, we know we're at the same starting point. We know that we're at a place where we can at least be together right now, and starting off at the same point will help us to at least move in the right direction further on down the line. It's kind of like the analogy I like to use for this is a bonsai tree. If anybody knows what a bonsai tree is, I believe it's a Japanese art form where you take a small sapling and at strategic points in growing the tree, you tie it down so that it bends over in a certain way. And as the tree gets older and older, you have this very sturdy looking tree in some very funky looking patterns of growth, which naturally would never occur. But starting off in the same place, you're planting the seed there. And then once you plant the seed together, you see where it grows. And as you see where the tree is growing, you can kind of change course. You can tie down the trunk, or you can lift the trunk. You can use wires to adjust it. So starting off the relationship in that kind of a way can help you both to be on the same page at the beginning, and not only help you be at the same page at the beginning, it can also help you to decide where you want to change the pattern of growth in the relationship itself. It's also like a bonsai tree, is that if you see a tree is growing in a way you don't want it to, you have to proactively address it. You can't just like tell yourself like, oh, okay, fine, well, it'll change. It won't. Because if this is the general trajectory that the relationship is following, odds are it'll keep going that way. You may have to proactively address where it's going and redirect it. So these are questions really to think about as you watch your relationship. Where do you see it going? Where do you want it to go? All right. So before we're talking about almost at the beginning of a relationship, by saying I don't have any particular intentions as to what's going to happen, other than making a safe relationship for us both to kind of develop our own relationship together. Once we start to build in the personality of both people, once we see how our personalities both interact, we can start to make changes and say, well, okay, fine, I see this is going well, so let's keep seeing where it goes. Or I'm not so this is working, let's make a change. Let's work together to make that kind of change. So that's an important question to really think about. Where you see it going, where you want it to go, and also thinking about how you can tactfully communicate that with the person who you're trying to develop a relationship with. Again, whether it's spouse, child, grandchild, step-grandchild, member of the extended family, the whole list of the mishpacha. So these are all thoughts that we can do when we ourselves are engaging in building our own relationships. And it's not, and I guess it's not even really, these things are not specifically with blended families, but these are important things to think about for sure with blended families when we are kind of bringing in all of this extra material with us. There's a lot more to deal with. There are more, the name of the webinar, the name of this class is blending families in a good way. I'll tell you the first thing I thought of when you think of the word blending families, the word blending, like most people have a kitchen implement, it's a blender, and you put different ingredients in and you put it all together and something amazing comes out. And that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to take all the different ingredients and put them together in the right way and create a final product, which is something that we can enjoy and really have some sort of a sense of fulfillment from. And that's really what we're looking for. So then there's another part of blending families, which I think is also important to address, which is the idea of giving support to someone else who maybe is having challenges in the area of creating their own blended family or growing, developing their own blended family. As we said, these are things that on the one hand, when left to their own devices, families develop organically. Just because something is organic though, doesn't mean that it's easy and great though. It can be very challenging. So you think about it, your child or your family member may be experiencing challenges in their new marriage, and they might consider you to be the safe person to confide in. You might be the person that they say, you know what, Uncle Bob, he's the person I want to talk to. I don't know if there's anybody actually named Bob here, because I can't see all the names. So if there is somebody, I'm not talking about you particularly. But you know, Uncle Bob, Aunt Sally, whatever, you know, grandma, grandpa, whoever it is, you might be the person that this individual feels like, okay, you know, they get me and I trust them to have my back. So the same questions or almost the same questions that we asked before about developing your own relationship, these are things that you can use to figure out exactly how you're going to lend support. What exactly is your role? Is your role a confidant? Are you somebody who the person just wants to kind of vent to? Or are they somebody that they're looking for advice? Are they looking for guidance? Are they looking for handholding? You have to know what they're looking for in order to properly fill what they're hoping to get from you. Which, like, it sounds obvious, but very often when we're put in situations where somebody else is coming to us and asking us for advice and asking us for some sort of support, there's a whole slew of different reactions, honestly, but it can be very natural to want to rescue the other person from whatever it is they're going through. It can also be very natural to kind of be on edge about this because we're not 100% sure that we can give whatever kind of help that they're asking for. And that's really the almost the most important question. What do you feel comfortable with? So let's say that a daughter or a granddaughter or a niece comes up and says, listen, I'm having some trouble and I really feel like you would be the right person to give me some sort of guidance. And if we say, and if you feel 100% comfortable giving that kind of guidance, then that's great. That's wonderful. Let's say you don't feel 100% comfortable giving guidance, whether it's because maybe you have weird feelings, you have a bad feeling about this person's husband, or it's because you just don't feel comfortable giving guidance about marriage for whatever reason, then it's okay to kind of set that boundary for yourself. I want to help you. I want to be able to support you in whatever way I can. The kind of support you're asking for isn't really something that I can give. I just don't feel I'm capable of giving you proper support, but I can do this for you. Or even if you don't want to say that right off the bat, you know, and you see, like, you know, the person is having conversations with you, and very often when I know this is true with therapists sometimes. If you have a therapist, I'm a therapist myself, and I know that sometimes if I'm approached for something which is beyond the scope of my training, beyond the scope of my practice, if I get into these conversations, like, many times I can hold my own, but very often I'll feel like I'm kind of treading water. And I'll tell people, listen, I'm happy to give you my insight, but this is not my scope of practice. And I think very often people feel that way when we get into these conversations where we really just don't feel confident in our abilities. So to be able to say at some point, as this person is asking for guidance, to be able to say, I don't really feel like I can continue to give you guidance on this level, but maybe I can help you find somebody who is. Maybe I can help you find somebody else to talk to who you would feel safe with and who you would feel doesn't have their own agenda and who you would feel comfortable talking to about what's going on and maybe getting some kind of higher level of help that I'm not capable of giving. I think whenever we go into talking about relationships, whenever we talk about supporting other people in their relationships, I think there are some basics that I think is just important for people to know. And like we mentioned before, the definition of what the stereotypical healthy relationship can be, what the ideal of a healthy relationship can be. I think it's important for people to know also what the unhealthy relationships might look like. So if we go back up to that quote, we were talking about how in a healthy relationship, there's commitment and there's a feeling of safety, there's a feeling of trust, there's a feeling of honesty. And there's also the ability to, by implication, there's also the ability to talk about what we're comfortable with and talk about that which we're not comfortable with. So in an unhealthy relationship, there you really just don't have that same dynamic. You don't have a dynamic in which people can talk about the things that are bothering them. People are talking, can't talk about the things that they want, the things that they hope for. There's a certain distance. The way I like to summarize it is that in a healthy relationship, when something goes wrong, there's a sense, whether it's on an individual front or in a relationship front, there's a sense of, okay, I can turn to my spouse. I can turn to the other person to discuss this. I can talk to them about what's going on. And that sense of safety that's present in a healthy relationship is really the thing that allows them to do that. In an unhealthy relationship, you don't necessarily have that. There's this, instead of a sense of turning towards that we can turn towards each other, there's a sense of turning away from each other. It's that I don't trust that you're going to be there for me. I don't trust that you're going to be able to support me in this. So I don't even bother turning to you because what's the point? So that's one of the hallmarks of an unhealthy relationship. And the nice thing about unhealthy relationships is that they can become healthier with proper guidance, whether it's a matter of learning proper tools or seeing a different perspective. You can sometimes help people to get to a point where they're looking at the relationship like, oh, maybe I could really talk to my husband about this. Maybe I really could talk to my wife about this or my kid about this. Maybe I could. So that's the nice thing about unhealthy relationships, that most people honestly exist somewhere in a spectrum between healthy and unhealthy. And the goal is to really move towards being as healthy as possible. When there's abuse present, which is a completely separate animal, it's not on the healthy, unhealthy spectrum at all, you'll see that there's a level of power being asserted over the other person. And you think about it, in any relationship, there's a sense of power. There's always going to be a power differential between two people in a relationship. A good illustration of this would be like, let's say you have a 300-pound bodybuilder and his wife who's 90 pounds. So there's a very obvious power difference there. But the reason that they're able to have such an amazing relationship is because there's trust. They both trust, she trusts him that he's never going to use that power in a way which would ever do anything to injure her, whether physically, emotionally, whatever it is. When you have somebody who does, God forbid, take advantage of whatever power difference they have, whether it's on a physical level, an emotional level, whatever it is, that's a major red flag. So the red flags of relationships that we want to keep an eye out for, and this is when people talk to us about their relationships, we want to see if this is something that they're experiencing. We also want to keep an eye on it for our own relationships. We want to make sure that there's no sense of condescension, that there's no power of being controlled, that there's no sense that there's possessiveness or being tremendously overbearing, that there's no fear in the relationship. We want to make sure that if these feelings are there, that we can acknowledge those feelings. And in general, so these are the red flags we call them, but even with the positive indicators, people have to learn to trust the positive indicators as well. If I feel excitement about a relationship, I might feel nervous about that because being excited about a relationship might mean something to me which I'm not comfortable with. But to be able to look at those feelings, to be able to look at that excitement, take it for what it is and acknowledge, I am excited about this relationship and that there are major reasons why I would be excited about it. And to be able to acknowledge also that there are reasons that I'm not always comfortable about being excited about a relationship, to be able to really take apart the big picture of our emotional world and look at each individual piece of it and to acknowledge and appreciate what each piece really means, can be helpful in and of itself, just to be able to kind of break down the experience. A lot of times when people go into new relationships, there's a whole wash. It can be overwhelming. There's a whole wash of just all these different feelings and sensations and ideas that are just running through our heads. And it's overwhelming. It can be. And especially when we're trying to engage in a relationship a second time around, or when we're supporting somebody who's engaging in a second relationship, that brings up very often a lot of historical things. So to be able to really break down what that emotional experience is and to look at it for what it is in the here and now, and to figure out how we feel about those feelings, that's something that we can, that's something that we probably can do if we're being that person who someone else comes to. Encouraging them to trust those feelings. Like Hashem built us in a way that we have feelings to help us interpret our experiences in a way that our feelings tell us what's safe and what's not. And the more we're able to trust those feelings, the more we'll really be able to react to what the relationship is or isn't based on what we're actually seeing. So in that sense, aside from encouraging people to trust their own feelings, and I acknowledge that this is something that many times people may not be 100% comfortable with, again, whether it's because of your own stuff, whether it's because of your own history, or whether it's just something that you feel is just overwhelming, that's fine. There's no reason why you should feel that you have to be able to do this, but you can also be a bridge to higher levels of support if that's what's necessary, whether it's a matter of connecting the person who's coming to you with a Rav, or connecting them with a Rebbetzin, or connecting them with a friend or a therapist or a mentor, or just somebody who you feel is able to give them the kind of help that you feel uncomfortable giving yourself. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's a sign of, you know, I mentioned before the idea of wanting to rescue somebody. So there's this dynamic of rescue that we talk about called rescuer versus helper. Very often when we get into these situations, we'll feel kind of an urge to rescue the person. And a lot of that, and when I say rescue, I mean like really fix the situation, see it through to the end, make sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. And it's almost like we make it our own story. We kind of take over their story and we make it our own. We're emotionally invested in their own story. And when that happens, it ends up that we're not giving them the support they need by us being involved. It's that we've become involved ourselves and we're supporting ourselves in our own need to see it through to the end. So sometimes that may end up working out very nicely. Sometimes that may be the exact same end result and everybody's happy at the end of the day, which would be very nice. More often than not, though, when a person gets into that mode of rescuer, it does impact the way we help. It does impact the way we give support. The best way to do it is to really be aware of what we're capable of giving, what kind of help we're really able to give, and being aware of what our limits are. And when we reach our limits, being able to say, this is an area which I'm not really comfortable with, and I don't think I'm able to give you the kind of help you need, let's find somebody who can. So being a bridge to higher levels of support or different levels of support, if that's what's needed, I think it's a beautiful thing. And that's honestly probably one of the most supportive things that you can do. Last but certainly not least is the idea of finding your own support. It doesn't matter whether you're the person who's blending your own family, or you're a member of a blended family, or you've been blended by someone else. It doesn't matter if you're being thrown into the blender or you're the one who's actually throwing the ingredients in yourself. Finding your own support can be so, so important. Because as we said, we all go into these situations with our own history, with our own impressions, with our own expectations. And it can be very, very hard, just as people, it can be hard to take those expectations, put them down, and go in with a completely clean slate. Pasuk in Tehillim says, "Min ha-meitzar karasi ka, anani ba-merchav ka." Pasuk says, I call out to God from the tight places, and he answers me with space. When we're by ourselves, we're in very tight spaces. We're limited by our own perceptions. We're limited by our own experiences. When we reach out and we get support from other people, that gives us space. It gives us not just a matter of like, oh, okay, this person told me to do something different. It really widens our own sense of what we can deal with. It gives us space to think. It gives us added bandwidth. It gives us an extra wavelength, if you want to call it that, to address whatever the situation is. And that, I think possibly over all else, is really the way to deal with any of these challenges that we've been talking about today, is to get the appropriate support, to be able to connect with people who understand you, who are able to validate you, who are able to appreciate what you're going through, the challenges that you're facing, regardless of how you answer the question, what is your role in this situation? The idea of connecting with other people who have similar experiences, or even not necessarily similar experiences, but really just understand you and are able to be there for you as you go through your journey, and to give you that kind of extra space. It's kind of like, there's the old saying, like, you have a lot on your plate. Connecting with other people gives you extra plates. It really does. It gives you extra place to put things on. And once you have those extra plates, you can move things around a little bit more, you can arrange things differently, you can present them differently, and you will see them from a potentially a completely different perspective based on who you're including in your circle of support. Okay, so I'm gonna jump into, I just wanna take a look at the, I guess let's open it up for any questions. If anybody wants to share anything, if anybody wants to, if anybody wants to ask any particular questions, I'm open to that.
Thank you so much, Ashar. You gave us so much to think about, so much information, so different way to think about relationships we're in. Do you have any questions or comments in your chat? I don't have anything on mine yet.
So we do have one question here. So I'm gonna read the question over, just checking to make sure there are no identifying details here. Okay, so this is a really interesting question. I think it's not uncommon at all. I'll just read the whole thing out loud. My daughter and her new husband are both parents of children. These children still have relationships with their other parents. They are married, yet their kids are still children of divorce, which is very true. Since they all have two parents, all the children here do have two parents, how do you truly blend them in terms of my daughter not being her stepchildren's mother? Baruch Hashem, she has a cordial relationship with them, but she isn't involved in making decisions on their behalf other than helping her husband figure things out. Baruch Hashem, again, the kids get along, which is such a bracha. It really is that the kids get along and that you have that kind of cordial relationship with them. Basically, they are all nice kids, which is, again, such a bracha that to have kids to deal with who are just nice kids who are willing to get along like that. It's definitely a challenge. It's definitely a huge challenge. And I think one thing to really think about it is what your own expectations of the family might be, or what I would say to your daughter is what her expectations of what blending the family might look like. It definitely takes a lot of, I wonder what her feelings are specifically about whatever it is that's going on in the situation as it stands now. And I would wonder how she and her husband together can talk about the specific details of how she feels things could be improved. Because I think it's a very general situation, and it is. It's a very big picture, and there are a lot of moving details in it. I think that when we want to look into how to blend a family on a bigger level, we want to think about, like, okay, what specifics are we talking about? Are there specific ways in which she feels that the family is not particularly blended? Because think about it, like when we talk about a blended family, we can't expect that it's going to end up looking the exact same way as a completely biological family might look. It's just not a realistic expectation. We have to accommodate the children's experience. We have to acknowledge the fact that there are X's in the picture, and it's a part of the big picture. The question is, how do we integrate the children's whole big picture into the whole big picture of what we ourselves are going through? And that in itself, I think, can only really be done by talking to by your daughter and her husband, talking specifically about the issues that she's concerned about, or the perceived lack that she feels of how the family is blending, and to see, well, okay, what can we do to make this better? And also keeping in mind that it's however good it gets, it's not going to change overnight. Everybody's coming into this with their own years of experience, with their own years of expectations and assumptions, and it's going to be a long trip. But really talking about the specific concerns together and working out a plan of action, or even just being heard on that front, can really help things to move along in a way. And I think what I mentioned before about about how people blend families together, people go in with expectations, a lot of that may be just an emotional reaction on her own part of not feeling fully accepted in a way. And, you know, I wouldn't want to guess that that's what's going on, just because I don't know her. But I would say that's a pretty safe assumption to make, that part of her feeling that it's not completely blended may have something to do with that. And looking at those feelings and acknowledging those feelings can be very powerful. Okay. All right. So yeah, and it's an excellent question. Do I know of any support groups for step parents? That's another one that came in. I can forward in for any information that I have to Robinson Steinig, and then I guess you can forward that to whoever's interested.
That would be great. If you could give us any information, you know, any contact information, if we could get that before we're ready to send the recording out, that everybody will have it. Nobody will have to ask for it. It'll be right there. Yeah. So any information that, you know, on support systems, I think would be wonderful. Do you have for any sure. other questions? Any other comments?
No.
I don't have anything else there. I guess you've given everybody quite a lot to think about, and I'm hoping people will stay on and will join us later for Let's Talk. Before we end the recording and end this portion of the program, I certainly want to thank Ishaya for just wonderful, wonderful information. So much for us to think about. And even, you know, if families, some families are blended, some are not, but everybody knows somebody in the situation. So the idea of sensitivity for those, I'm sure, is always appreciated, and to share any of the resources that we're receiving. So I just wanted to mention that today's program is the last that we're doing for a couple of weeks. We're coming back with God's help, but we're taking a Hanukkah break and a post-Hanukkah break. And our next program will be January, I think it's January 3rd for Aseret B'Teves. And we'll be having a special program on that day. The plan is right now for that to be a hybrid program. So if anybody lives in the Northern New Jersey area and would like to join us in Passaic, at Young Israel of Passaic Clifton, that is where we will be hosting the program, plus, of course, zooming it out internationally to everybody else who can't make the program. So you'll be getting lots of information about that in the weeks to come. Also, as we end the secular year, as we go into Hanukkah, I just want to comment that everybody always receives the donate button for Spirit. Please consider Spirit among your charitable donations. It's certainly appreciated. We want to, in the months to come, expand our programming, go into other areas, and we can't do that without your help. So please think about Spirit. And if you don't feel comfortable with online donations, you can always send a check. Just the information is all there. Just indicate that it's for Spirit so that we know that. Okay. I'm going to end the recording now. One second.